You're listening to the Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast, a series of conversations with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world, brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, located in Beijing. I'm Paul Hanley, the director of the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, and I'll be your host. Today, we're at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Innovation Tower, surrounded by construction. Hope this does not interfere too much with the podcast, but we're pleased to be joined by my Carnegie colleague, Dr. Li Bin, a senior associate in the Nuclear Policy Program and the Asia Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Dr. Li Bin is also a professor of international relations at Tsinghua University. He is a physicist and an expert on nuclear disarmament and nuclear nonproliferation, and his research focuses on China's nuclear and arms control policy and U.S.-Chinese nuclear relations. Li Bin, we're thrilled to have you here with us today to discuss the recently concluded third nuclear security summit in Brussels, as well as U.S.-China nuclear security cooperations. Again, welcome.
Thank you, Paul.
The third nuclear security summit concluded on March 25th at The Hague. This was an initiative, of course, that originated in 2009 from a speech by President Obama in Prague, in which he called nuclear terrorism one of the greatest threats to international security. President Obama continued on to host the first nuclear security summit in Washington, D.C. in 2010 to draw attention at the highest levels in the international community to the need to secure nuclear material and prevent nuclear terrorism. The second summit was hosted in Seoul in 2012, and this year's summit was attended by close to 60 world leaders. Li Bin, can you briefly explain for our listeners the main goals and key objectives of this year's summit and what issues were discussed?
The main goal of this nuclear security summit is still the same as the previous two summits. The goal is to better protect fission materials, radioactive materials, and the nuclear facilities from terrorist attacks. And at this summit, world leaders discussed the action plans and the implementations of these action plans and the cooperation in new ideas how to promote nuclear security. Mm.
Can you give us a sense, looking at China for a second, give us a sense, in your view, what contributions China has made to international nuclear security and the prevention of nuclear terrorism?
China has made several very important contributions. The first contribution is a very important political support to the common goal of all our countries on nuclear security. If you look at the first and second nuclear security summit, U.S.-China relations were not as good as this one, but Chinese top leaders still attended the first and second nuclear security summit. China understand that this is a common goal, and although different countries may have some problems in their bilateral relations, but we should not sacrifice the common goal on nuclear security because we have some other problems. Mm. So China always takes a very firm support to the common goal. And the second important contribution is that China proposed some important ideas how to strengthen nuclear security summit. For example, in the nuclear security summit in Seoul, China, together with South Korea and Japan, proposed that we should pay more attention to the security of radioactive material in addition to that of fission materials. The original idea of nuclear security summit was more on the security of fission materials, but the East Asian countries also worry about the security of radioactive materials. Mm-hmm. So China South Korea, Japan suggest that we should pay equal attention to these materials. Mm-hmm. And the suggestion was well taken by the second nuclear security summit. Mm-hmm. And you know, China also shares with other countries about its own experience on nuclear security. And China is working on a training center mm-hmm. together with its neighbors and with the United States. And the training center will open to the whole world. It will take Chinese from China and other countries as well.
Li Bin, during the summit this time, President Xi Jinping presented the first articulation of China's nuclear security concept. Can you give us a sense of the main messages of this nuclear security concept? And are there major differences between China's concept, China's nuclear security concept, and the international community's understanding of nuclear security?
I believe that China shares the common goal with other countries on nuclear security. China also shares most approach. China agree with other countries on most approaches on nuclear security. But this time, President Xi Jinping proposed some new concept that may be very unique. When I say unique, I mean it's based on Chinese philosophy, because in nuclear security, there are some competing efforts, competing goals, competing arrangements. How do we deal with these competing efforts and goals? He said, people may have different ideas. Mm-hmm. For example, when we worry about nuclear security, an easy way is to roll back. We get rid of war nuclear materials, war nuclear industry. Then we do not have to worry about nuclear security. Mm-hmm. That's one way to think about that. If we think about this, it means that nuclear security and the development of nuclear energy are two separate and opposite goals. But maybe we should not say that they are opposite goals, but apparently they are competing goals. According to Chinese philosophy, when you see competing goals, you should manage the balance of the two. So in Xi Jinping's speech, he raised some ideas how to manage such competing goals like development and security, responsibility and right, domestic effort and international cooperation, temporary approach and long-term approach. According to his speech, we should manage these competing arrangement and goals. I don't think that this is easy for other countries to take this suggestion for two reasons. One, that this is based on Chinese philosophy. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I think we, the Chinese, we need to make more effort to transfer these ideas, philosophy, into operational arrangement. Only in that way, other countries and experts can benefit from mm-hmm. such ideas. Mm-hmm. So far, it's still a little bit too abstract mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. many Westerners. Mm-hmm. How can we manage such competing goals?
Yeah.
We need to operationalize mm-hmm. these concepts.
Yes. The nuclear security concept, there's also at the same time a lot of thinking that says China's moving to a more active foreign policy. Can we also see this newly articulated concept of China's nuclear security concept as an indication that China will play a more active role in international nuclear security?
Yes. I think China's foreign policy has become more active in general. And on this issue, we can see that China wants to make more contribution. Uh, especially, you know, more unique contribution. You know, China joined a lot in the discussions in the past, but now China wants to make some unique contribution, contribution that other country may not, you know, may not do, but China could do. So we can see that. But for communication reason, we need to better explain these ideas. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, as I just said, it's still a little bit too abstract.
Yeah. Yes. Now, one of the big pieces of news that came out of the Nuclear Security Summit, of course, was that Japan announced it would hand over 700 pounds of weapons-grade plutonium and enriched uranium to the U.S., many called this a major victory for President Obama's efforts to secure nuclear materials around the world. Some have cited Japan's large nuclear stockpile as evidence of a double standard about the ways in which nations are treated and trusted when it comes to nuclear capabilities. And China has publicly denounced Japan's supply, warning about the risk that the Japanese government could decide one day to seek its own weapons. How significant is this announcement that Japan made at the nuclear summit, in your opinion, and can this help reassure China?
There are two issues here. One is nuclear nonproliferation. The other is nuclear security. Let me explain the perspective of nuclear nonproliferation first. If Japan keeps a large amount of fission material usable for weapons, that poses a threat of nuclear proliferation. Japan could use this as a nuclear latency and use this as a potential. Whenever Japan decides to develop nuclear weapons, it would have technologies, materials, and some components to do that. So this is a concern of nuclear proliferation. I believe that China has such concerns on Japan, and I believe that it's useful and important for China to raise this concern and to encourage Japan to return plutonium, especially weapon-grade plutonium, back to the United States. So that is the perspective of nuclear proliferation. And the other perspective, the other way to look at this issue is nuclear security, because if Japan keeps a large amount of weapon usable fission material, that would pose some risks for terrorist group to get access to that. If terrorist group could have access to these fission materials, then it would be very dangerous, very bad for the security of Japan and its neighbors. So for that reason, so it's not a zero-sum game.
Right.
If Japan returns this to the United States, they have agreed to do so. That is very good for the security of the Japanese society. Mm-hmm. The Japanese people would not have to worry about that terrorist group would attack fission materials and would produce nuclear weapons by using these fission materials. So for that reason, I would say that it's a reassurance to the Chinese society, to the Japanese society, to the Korean society, and for the whole world mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. Lee Bin, as you know, the Nuclear Security Summit relies heavily on cooperation between the U.S. and Russia.
Right.
And this year, the Ukraine crisis overshadowed much of the summit and has, in many views, derailed the hopes of nuclear disarmament advocates who have been pushing for the U.S. to remove about 200 B-61 gravity bombs from European soil. How much, in your view, do you think the nuclear disarmament and security cooperation initiatives were and will be affected by the current Ukraine crisis and the deteriorating tensions between the United States and Russia?
Again, here there are three relevant issues here. One is nuclear security. The other is nuclear proliferation, and the third is nuclear disarmament. Right now, it is very difficult to promote nuclear disarmament between the United States and Russia. But the reason is not because of the Ukraine crisis. The reason, there are two reasons here. One is that now Russia has a relatively stable size of nuclear arsenal. The Russians do not have to worry about that their nuclear arsenal would shrink mm-hmm. due to aging. So the Russians have lost their interest in further nuclear reductions together with the United States, the first reason. The second reason is a missile defense. The Russians complain that the United States is not serious to a commitment of restraining its missile defense development. So that makes the Russians reluctant to further nuclear reductions. So the issue of nuclear disarmament is not so much relevant to this crisis, but it's in the difficulty, but it's not so much relevant to this. For nuclear non-proliferation, the most important thing right now is Iran here. Russia may become less active on the negotiations. Mm-hmm. We do not know yet. We will see. If that happens, that would be very bad for the negotiations, because we have seen some positive evidence that the negotiations would move forward. If Russia becomes less active, it may not be good for positive result. So we hope that Russia would still be active in these negotiations. And on nuclear security, United States and Russia have cooperations in multilateral forums like Nuclear Security Summit. They also have bilateral cooperation. I don't think the Ukraine crisis would hurt the U.S. the U.S. Russian cooperation in the multilateral arrangement. That part would still go forward without mm-hmm. any problem. So we can see that Russia still sent high-level officials to this nuclear security summit.
Yeah.
And they still support most arrangement of the nuclear security summit. But the bilateral cooperation may be affected by the crisis because since the end of the Cold War, United States and Russia, they have been working together to help Russia on the security of the Russian fission materials. For mm-hmm. example, to downblending the highly enriched uranium produced in Russia, and to convert that into low enriched uranium.
Yeah.
For nuclear energy, we call that as nuclear threat initiative,
yeah.
nuclear threat reduction programs. Such kind, I hope they will not be affected, but there is a risk that such bilateral cooperation may be affected by such crisis. I believe that we need to do more work. To persuade the two governments to continue their bilateral cooperation on nuclear security.
Li Bin, my last question, I want to talk about U.S.-China cooperation. You have mentioned previously the Center of Excellence on Nuclear Security that the United States and China have jointly funded. And in the past several years, there seems to have been growing cooperation between the United States and China on nuclear security issues. However, as you know, there remains a certain level of mistrust between the United States and China. And I'd like to know from your perspective, how do you see the current state of U.S.-China nuclear security cooperation? And do you think our two countries can improve the levels of cooperation on nuclear security going forward?
The two countries have some problems on nuclear cooperation, on nuclear non-proliferation, nuclear disarmament. But the two countries have very good cooperation on nuclear security. So in general, the cooperation between the two countries on nuclear security is very good. But still, there are some problems. I found a problem. I talked with my students and colleagues. We found a problem in the cooperation. But this is not a problem between the United States and China. It's a problem among all countries. Mm-hmm. If you look at the nuclear security summit this time and the two previous ones, you will see that besides nuclear security summit, there were some parallel meetings. But all the participants, or most participants, are nuclear scientists in arms control. WMD controllers, weapons of mass destruction controllers. You cannot see many experts on law enforcement. Mm-hmm. But we need both nuclear scientists, WMD controllers, but we also need experts on law enforcement, mm-hmm. but we cannot see them. Mm-hmm. We realize that nuclear scientists, WMD controllers, they have a tradition of dialogue. So it's easy for them to get together.
Right.
And they know each other. They have very good channels to talk.
Yeah.
But for experts on law enforcement, they work on individual countries. They do not talk to each other.
Yeah.
But we need them. We need them to make their contribution to nuclear security.
Mm-hmm.
We need them to share data how to stop nuclear terrorism.
Right.
But unfortunately, the last three nuclear security summits and some other international cooperation have not yet included much effort on this. And maybe the next nuclear security summit in Washington should consider this. We should encourage more experts on law enforcement to join the discussions, to join international dialogue.
Well, it sounds like a worthy initiative, Li Bin, and look forward to seeing you push that good idea from your office in the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington, D.C., and from your platform here at Tsinghua University. It's been a pleasure to talk to you today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our website at www.carnegietsinghua.org and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next time.